and welcome to the Silmarillion Film Project, and Happy New Year from me, since I wasn't on the last one. So this is my first session of 2024, but it's great to be back. It's good to see my buddies. Missed you guys over the holidays. I don't think I've seen you guys for like a month and a half, right?
Yeah, it's been going on 2 months now since the end of November.
It's just like missed all of December. But we're back. We're racing ahead in the new year. We're hitting the ground running. And today we're talking about minor storylines and characters.
That's it.
Just really exciting stuff. But actually, it really is. I was looking through the notes that Marie always prepares for us, which is very helpful. And I'm psyched.
Yeah, there's a lot of really fun things. Yeah, exactly. We get a bunch of... this is the kind of thing... I mean, it's always interesting to think about, you know, the big plot line, right? Like to think about Baron and Luthien last season and to think about, you know, the Nir Naeth Ornoediad this season and everything. But one of the things that has been so rewarding and so interesting about the Silmarillion project from the beginning is thinking about the stuff that's happening, you know, off camera from the main thing, you know, really kind of building the continuity of story across Beleriand that you just don't get in the published Silmarillion because it's not the kind of narrative that Tolkien is trying to do. So both building up the storylines that are going to come in and pay off, like, of course, I think the first person we're going to talk about tonight is Gwyndor, who is a minor character but plays a memorable role in the main storyline, right? So there are going to be some things like that where we need to make sure we have the whole background to that. Like, you get like one clause of context for Gwyndor's action in the book, right? We're told in less than one full sentence, we are told about Gwyndor's brother being captured and, you know, and why, you know, his actions are significant. And then we get his actions, right? And that's cool. Like it's interesting, but it's really fun to kind of build that. I've already introduced him as a character and to be, you know, kind of building that and thinking about the ways in which we're deliberately setting the stage for the further story of Gwyndor and the Turin story to come and everything. So thinking about, you know, filling in the gaps and making all the connections is, I think it's a really, really fun element of this story, and that is indeed what we're going to get to do tonight.
By the way, if I can briefly sidetrack us, I can't tell you how disappointed I am that I missed out on the discussion of cross-continental travel communication.
I was thinking of you.
The details of which are like that has Bree and Nick all written all over. Who was like, hey, wait a minute, guys.
I don't know what you... Hey, we didn't even bring it up. I'm pretty sure that Corey brought it up.
I think so, I did.
Yes, what happened was Corey saw the map.
Yeah. I was looking at the map and...
And then things happened.
Things happened, yeah.
But...
Yeah.
It all resolves into a... But it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
They can travel where they need to. So it's fine. Don't worry. There's not detailed travel plans in the plans here yet. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I'm interested because on the one hand, you're right. We have plenty of time. But it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if there's a way to convey it, what's happening on the screen, without it looking like the last season of Game of Thrones.
Exactly. I knew you would be... sensitive to that.
Well, just we put it like we'll have little interstitials or text on the screen that's like 20 years later.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Though there are political implications as well for the. I mean, you know, as we were looking at how more than ever Doriath is now like looming over every attempt to connect. You know, east and west, as far as Beleriand is concerned, now that they can't skip it and go around the north across the plain. Anyway.
Maybe Thangol will install a hyperloop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry I missed out on that one, but that is the stuff that people come to this podcast for.
That's it. Exactly. All right, so hang on. Quick announcements first. We have our rapidly filling moot calendar. We've got a bunch of stuff coming up, including Ozmoot, which is happening next week. I'm going to be headed down to Australia next week for Ozmoot in Sydney. Lots of film stuff happening. We're going to have like multiple panels and sessions on film. As of course, I'll be hanging out with both Alana Mushin and Philip Menzies down there. So I am hopeful that we'll get to hear more of his Ina Lindelay down there. He presented on the first half of the Ina Lindelay last year. And I don't know for sure, but I hope we'll be able to hear more. Anyway, so it's always great fun to connect with folks down in Australia. So that's happening. And I would emphasize, of course, that all of our moots are available in hybrid format. So you can join in from anywhere and you can get recordings. If you can't stay up at the admittedly awkward hours that that Ozmoot is going to be happening at, compared to where many of you all are living in North America and Europe, but I don't think the Australians are going to apologize about that. Anyway, then we have Sunshine Moot happening in February. We've got Tex Moot and SoCal Moot happening in April and May. There's some others that are going to be coming in there too, like Wild Rose Moot up in Edmonton. Our second Canadian Moot will be happening in May too, I believe. New England Moot just confirmed on October 19th and 20th, and Carolina Moot on November 9th. And UK Moot, we're going to be back in Europe for the first time in 5 years, I think. Back over to the UK, to York, England, on the 27th of April. Lots of really fun things happening. Was just hearing rumors of a potential moot in Germany in Oktoberfest season. So, like, anyway, so who knows? Lots of things. Lots of things coming down the pike with moot stuff. So I'm not going to digress looking at the map this week. I'm just not. It isn't going to happen at all. Nope. Okay, I have one question. Just one question, though. My only map-related question this week. Mm-hmm. What, if anything, is happening down at the mouths of Sirion these days? Kierdan is there? Kierdan is there already?
No.
Not yet?
He's got Brithombar and Eglera still.
Right. They've been rebuilt already?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the mouths of Sirion is probably not really populated. There might be like a fishing village there or something. I don't know. It's like, I'm not saying there's no boats there or no Sindar presence of right. the Falath from along the coast, but it's not a community that's like a large community, certainly.
It's really not going to be until the fall of Nargothrond that we're going to really start building up a significant.
Right. It becomes the refugee center and right. we'll tell a story with the refugees specifically after the fall of Gondolin.
Yeah.
But.
Of course.
Gondolin's not the first place to fall, right, as you point right. out. So yeah, probably the fall of Nargothrond will be the beginning there. Are Gelmir and Arminas supposed to have been coming from the mouths of Sirion in the original story? Was that their origin?
It's interesting to me that the mouths of Sirion are they come into this, like, Tolkien keeps bringing them into the story and then writing them out of the story. You know, like how Tuor was supposed to go down, like way down into Nantathrin and stuff, and then gets rerouted, right? I mean, I feel like Tolkien kept being drawn to, like, South Beleriand and the mouths of Sirion, and almost never actually, like, left any any narrative that he wrote actually happening down there. Yeah, anyway.
It's the type of thing where if we want there to be something already established before the refugees arrive, we can certainly have that. But if we don't go there,
until it's needed, that's fine too.
Right, right, right. Yes. Okay. That's my only question, my only map-related question. I wanted to get the framework on that. All right, so let's talk about Gwyndor. First question, remind me what we've done with him so far. We introduced him. Did we have him involved? We met him, didn't we, when we were down in Argothrond before?
Yes. So yes. He played a role in the Dagor Bragalloch. So he was part of Finrod's army and therefore was in the scenes at the Fens of Sarek at the end of season 5.
Right.
Which is when his brother is captured, right?
Right, right.
And then in season 6, he's a very minor background character in Nargothrond in the sense that he has lines of someone has to come tell Finrod or Orodreth that something is going on, and one of the elves doing that type of thing, appearing in court scenes, is Gwyndor.
Right.
But he has no characterization in season 6. He's simply a Nargothrond character around.
Okay.
The main thing that people in Nargothrond could do in season 6 was choose to follow Finrod when he left on his quest.
Right.
And Gwyndor noticeably did not do that.
You can tell on account of how he's still alive.
Yes. So Gwyndor remained in Nargothrond when there was the shift in power from Finrod to Orodreth, and with the Sons of Feanor being around.
And so we would probably want to sort of spin that as a an act of, like, loyalty to Orodreth rather than a lack of loyalty to Finrod, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. We have to figure out now who he is as a character. Because, like, he's been on screen, but he's pretty blank slate at this point. So we can go in lots of directions with him. So he could have some pretty serious flaws.
Mm-hmm.
And lack of loyalty to Finrod could be one of them. Or like his reason for not going could be something negative. Or it could be that he was loyal to Orodreth. He had a reason to stay. I mean, he likes Orodreth's daughter, so.
There's that too, yes.
Right.
Yes.
He had a reason to stay as a.
It doesn't stop him from running off to the Nirnaeth, though. But
it doesn't, but that's different. But, like, that's when we have to establish why it's different. So, why is it different now than when Finrod was like, hey, I'm going on a crazy quest.
So let me ask this. How harshly are we judging the population at large of Nargothrond for the disloyalty to Finrod? Right? Like, are we accusing the entire population of this disloyalty? And how strong are the terms that we would use under these circumstances? Because because Gwyndor is in the category of almost everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Only 12 guys went.
Right.
So everybody else stayed. And do we care about that? Is it because of Curufin and Celeborn being so powerful? Is it because most people don't just join on random dangerous quests for the fun of it? So why would they have gone with him? You know, like.
But I wonder, regardless of the reason, I wonder if what we can show is that he regrets it.
Mm.
And that would be a reason why he would go off on a different dangerous quest, or why he would act differently.
Well, it would be a good opportunity for us to illustrate the point of view of the vast majority of people who didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, why, not necessarily to justify it, but to contextualize it.
So, okay. On the one hand, I think we have to be a little bit reasonable, right? When Finrod calls for people to come with him, he's obviously not calling for an evacuation or, like, some kind of migration, right? I mean, it's not like it would even be desirable on his part to have 100% of the people of Nargothrond thronging along with him with their livestock and their children and everything else, right? Like, I don't think that's what he was calling for right there.
No.
Right?
But he mustered an army to go to the Dagar Bragalloch, and that included people like Gwyndor.
Sure. But so,
and only 12 guys went with him on the quest with Beren. So
right.
But, he had an army, and he didn't take them.
Did he want an army?
I don't know. That's
See, that's what I'm wondering. Like, I think the very first, before we can even answer the question about what do we think of the average person from Nargothrond, I think we need to clarify, like, what exactly was Finrod asking for? Like, what if
well,
if
what did
if he
we
had
say he was asking for? Is like yeah. We've already
we wrote that script.
Yes, that exists.
So I would have to reread the scene to know exactly what Finrod said. In general, there was tension and power play between our main characters.
Sure.
And that's what we were just showing is what they were choosing. So there was no expectation that the entire population of Nargothrond would get up and go.
Yeah. No.
But the part where Finrod throws down his crown and Orzreth picks it up and is like, no, you're like, you're still king. Finrod's like, no, I'm not. So when he's already renounced the kingship, he's obviously not going to command the army to come with him because that's not a thing you do if you're no longer king. So he wasn't commanding anyone or even like strongly requesting. He just said, I'm doing this thing. And some guys went with him.
And there's clearly a sense of, I mean, again, Nick, your question is rooted in the idea that there was a failure. Like, there was, to some extent, there was a betrayal of Finrod by the people of Nargothrond. Like, he called, they didn't answer, right? He felt that they were ungrateful. He cast down his crown because he was like, my kingship is a sham. I've asked for your support and you're not supporting me. You're siding, with Celeborn and Curufin instead, right? So there clearly is a dynamic of not just failure, but almost in a sense of betrayal. But I think if we clarify what he hoped, what response exactly did he want? What did he hope for in that scene? If what he received seemed to him like a betrayal, seemed to him like a rejection of his kingship, right? That seems to be how he took it, right? What would a non-rejection of his kingship have exactly looked like? And then I think that will help us to kind of place Gwyndor
right
in there.
So the conflict with the Feanorians was that they didn't want Beren doing the quest at all.
Yes.
If someone's going to go after a Silmaril, it needs to be, you know, for Feanorian purposes, not for whatever Beren was up to.
Yes.
And
some nonsense about trying to marry elf maidens or something.
Yeah, whatever that was. So the goal of Finrod saying, hey, I made an oath to this guy and I need to honor that and stand by my word and go do what I said I would do. And the Feanorian saying, you shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Finrod took that very personally, that mm-hmm. No, I'm going to do the right thing here, and I'm pretty clear on what the right thing is. So his people didn't need them all to come with him on a quest.
Right.
But he needed them to acknowledge that the quest was the right thing to do. And the speech that the Feanorians managed to really hit home for everyone in Nargothrond was, we're safer if we all stay here and don't do all that. Like, going off on this quest is a dangerous thing, not just to whoever goes on it, but to the safety of Nargothrond.
Yes.
So, like, they were accusing him of being a bad king.
Yes.
By accepting the quest.
Yes.
And that's where he feels betrayed, is if anyone agreed with that evaluation of his kingship and his leadership of founding Nargothrond in the first place as a safe haven. Like, he built the place to keep everyone safe, and now they're saying he's bad at that.
Right.
Like, that's where the betrayal comes in. So Gwyndor could have silently agreed with Finrod that the quest was fine and just not gone because he didn't have to be part of that. So he doesn't have to be disloyal to still exist in Nargothrond. But very few people were speaking up in support of Finrod at that time.
Right.
So that silence was where Finrod's like, yeah, okay, we're done here. Like, I'm not the leader.
So if you could accuse elves in general of kind of a fatal flaw, indecisiveness is kind of...
saying both no and yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And that might be what we kind of want to draw on here. Like, maybe given time, you know, unfortunately, Beren was eventually going to get old and die. So there really wasn't that the elvish amount of time to make a decision like this. Because, you know, you only have, like, maybe 60 more years if he's very, very lucky.
Well, and he presumably wants to get married before that.
Right.
So.
Yeah, yeah, which is just, you know, like, who does that? Yeah.
Mortals.
Yeah. 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 So the understanding of the timeline that's present, which Finrod has a very deep understanding of, you know, Finrod lost Beor.
Right. He
and
understands
a bunch of other people after.
Yeah, he understands change and mortality better than most of the elves do.
Right.
But the elves of Nargothrond had a couple generations of the House of Beor living there.
But that
so
didn't mean that they
seen
had
this.
Seen, but not necessarily experienced in the same way that Finrod
has. It depended whether or not they were friends or worked closely with those people. But
So
not every elf, but some of the elves of Nargothrond certainly share Finrod's experience.
They know on an intellectual level. Mm-hmm. That humans die quickly.
No, I mean, I assume that having lived under the same roof for 100 years, that some of the elves got to know some of the humans quite well and therefore mourned the loss of dying from old age.
Sure, sure.
The way Finrod mourns Beor.
Yes.
But not all of them.
But I would say that it's not necessarily a part of the elvish mindset, even at this point.
No, Finrod is...
He's asking them to make a much quicker decision than they're really comfortable making, which, I mean, that doesn't make it okay. Right?
Right. So I have a... I think this is a backing up one step question about Gwyndor. Because who is he? What exactly is his status? Because I'm not convinced he's just a dude. I mean,
he has some authority. Like, he gets to deliver messages to the King of Nargothrond and speak for, like, hey, this is the situation of what's going on.
Right.
So he's not nobody, but he's not necessarily, like, leading the entire army or anything like that.
No,
he is,
I mean,
just in that structure.
He's not
like in
the
leadership structure.
Right. But I mean,
he's in the court.
I think he's clearly that. I mean, first of all, I don't get the impression that his love of Finduilas is felt to be inappropriate or like any kind of overstepping on his part.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Like, if that had panned out just fine, everyone would have been fine with it, right?
Right. So, like I said, he's a member of the court, and she's a member of the court, and it's not, they're not in different places.
And there's certainly the sense in the Turin story, I mean, a sense that is amplified by the fact that he's one of, like, three named elves of Gondolin, or sorry, of Nargothrond in the whole story, right? But anyway, that gives the impression that he's a pretty significant... The fact that he does speak against, you know, he has a voice in the councils of the king, like he's clearly on in you know, Orodreth's inner circle there. Now, again, that's later, right? And he can kind of, he could theoretically sort of graduate to that. But the fact that he ends up in Orodreth's inner circle and then also was, like, in line to marry Orodreth's daughter...
Yeah.
Comfortably, presumably, suggests to me that he's definitely not, like, you know, a random guy. I mean, I understand what
I
you mean when you say
I
that he's not, like, a crucially important guy. Like, he's not in the family of the king. He's not, but, and he's not Mablung either. I mean, he's not, like, you know, just as
running everything for
right,
the king.
Exactly. He's not. Yeah. He's not the right hand of Orydreth necessarily. Certainly wasn't of Finrod.
He was not of Finrod.
Right.
Yes.
Was not of Finrod.
It's also like he definitely doesn't come back from Thangorodrim and get a promotion.
Right.
Societally speaking, like wherever he's at when he gets captured, if anything, his status would
drop
down.
Yes.
Right.
Agreed.
So he's got to be important enough for him to be able to speak in that council.
Yep.
And to travel in the same circles as Finduilas, before the Near Ninth.
Yeah.
So, but the suggestion that he was already a part of Orydreth's kind of cadre,
mm-hmm,
seems right.
Yeah.
You know, he's. I feel like he's probably Gil-galad's generation.
Possibly. So, one of the things that I'm kind of building towards here, I think, I'm not saying we must do this, but I think it would be really easy to suggest that although not everybody was supposed to volunteer to go with Finrod, Gwyndor kind of should have. That it was actually, especially, now he doesn't have to be, you know, right, Finrod's right-hand dude, but he was one of his warriors.
He was one of Finrod's guys, not one of Orydreth's guys.
Right.
He was like, one of Orydreth moved here with everybody from Minas Tirith who survived. Gwyndor was already in Nargothrond all along.
Right.
As one of Finrod's people. So,
right.
Yeah.
And again, he was like, we met him and his brother, right, when they were fighting right alongside Finrod. Like, if there's no, Finrod wouldn't have expected everybody to come with him. But, like, would Gwyndor have been on the list of people that he might have thought maybe they would come with me?
Especially since the whole Oath of Barahir thing involved the people in the...
He was right there! Exactly!
So Gwyndor is one of the people who was saved by the arrival of Barahir.
Right. Even overlooking the very important fact that you just raised, that he, in fact, was saved by the same mechanism, right? But even just the fact that he witnessed the oath, right? Yeah. I mean, like, he's
That's
an insider
what I mean.
To that.
He was there.
Yeah, he's an insider to that in a way. You could easily, at the very least, it would be easier for me to make an argument to say that Finrod has got to be like, seriously, Gwyndor, you're not coming? I don't need everybody, but like, yeah, maybe. Maybe like the band of people who are cut off with me and like that might have been nice. Anyway, so I'm just suggesting there could be a good reason if we want there to be a good reason why Gwyndor didn't go.
It sounds like we're kind of suggesting. So unfortunately, this kind of bounces a bit back and forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Gwyndor was involved in the Daga Bragalach. His brother was impetuous, got captured. So that affects Gwyndor's decision-making going into the Beren and Lúthien story.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a little bit more conservative. He doesn't... He's indecisive when it comes time to decide, I'm going to go with Finrod. And then after that, does he now become the voice of impetuosity again? He essentially becomes the Turin of that age. So he winds up going to the Near Ninth, and then he gets captured himself, gets damaged in Angband, and then returns a humble Gwyndor,
right,
a sad and small Gwyndor.
Right.
And
a broken
now
Gwyndor,
he's
yeah.
Right, and now he's back to the voice of anti-impetuosity. It feels like a lot of...
That's a lot of movement, especially since we've had so little development of him to this point, right?
Right.
I mean, we do... The one... That's the one thing that the story of the text is very firm on is his move from impetuous to conservative, right?
Right.
Post-Angband. And so I would feel like we would need a really good reason to make him anything but impetuous pre-Angband. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's possible. I mean, as you say, we could imagine the kind of sequence that you describe, but that's a lot. We don't really have much time to do that. In fact, some of it would have to be retro.
What if he was
going to go with Finrod and Finduli asked him to stay?
Something like that would totally work for me. I mean, because that's the other thing. The other thing is that, like, the Gwyndor that we're told about, right? Like, Mr. Impetuous forward into battle. Why does he not volunteer to go? Like, surely he's going to be in the front of the queue to go with Finrod, right?
The reason we didn't have him volunteer is we wanted him to survive.
Well, exactly. I know we couldn't, obviously, but...
Right. So, yeah, he needs to have a reason to hang back, and we aren't going to go back and rehash it. So at this point, he has to have either some regrets or some, I wanted to go and then I didn't, but everybody who did go just kind of died uselessly, so I guess it's good I didn't. Like, he's got to have that weird regret, but not really, thing about it.
Wouldn't you think that Gwyndor would have, like, a double helping of survivor's guilt?
Yeah.
Yes.
From his brother and from Finrod?
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Dirad Kuray is suggesting, like, he might be thinking, if I had gone, maybe Finrod would have lived, right? Yes. Yeah. Not that that's reasonable, but that's a thing he might be thinking, yeah.
Yeah, in those situations, it's like, oh, what could have gone differently, right? Mm.
So,
also, he seems like an irrational confidence kind of guy.
So, what if at some point in the season, while we're telling the story of Nargothrond, as we are preparing to have it, you know, to have him go off to the Nir Naeth, we have Finduilas try to talk him out of it, and we can kind of retcon a little bit by flashing back just a little bit to a scene,
or
of
even
them.
Just her alluding to it, yeah,
right. You know, but well, or he alludes to it, and she says, "Yeah," and they all died,
right.
So the implication would be then that she didn't want him to go the first time, and he didn't go, and she still doesn't want him to go the second time, and he's like, "Tough luck. This time I'm going.
This time I'm going."
Yeah.
And
she's still not happy about it. But that way we don't have to rehash the old decision. If they're having the same conversation now, we can just imply that they've had this conversation before. And last time he made a choice that she liked.
Yes.
And this time he's not.
And there are several things that are fun about this. One thing, of course, is that in essence, of she's right. Though for the wrong reasons, right? His going is going to be tragic and a really bad idea, right?
But it also gives a little bit more, like, when he comes back and she's not into him anymore, it's not just because he's small and sad. It's also because none of this had to happen. You did not have to do this. You know, I told you not to go, and I'm done. I said I was done when you left, and now I'm super done.
Okay, so she's going to do the, if you walk out that door, don't come back.
Yeah, you're choosing between love and duty.
So, yeah, but she's making it clear that she's not okay with his choice to go, and he goes anyway. So that's a pretty harsh send-off, right?
It is. But, you know, so I'm kind of liking...
It explains what happens later.
Yeah, I'm liking this element for that reason, right? Like the business with Finduilas and Turin and Gwyndor, like that love triangle later on,
it makes her look really petty.
Yes. Like, it is, in a low-key way, one of the biggest, like, world-building... it's a pretty significant world-building continuity obstacle for me, actually, in the Silmarillion. Because that's just... Elves aren't like that. Like, he tells us elves don't do that.
Right.
You know, the kind of like, I used to be in love with you, but now there's this really hot guy and I kind of like him now instead. And Gwyndor being like, yeah, you took my love from me and it would all have been fine. I mean, like that it's weird. That's not very elvish. Like it's not quite Maeglin levels of like perversion, but it's like that's not a good look for either one of them, frankly, for either Gwyndor or for Finduilas, but especially for Finduilas. She comes off looking pretty bad, I think, in that whole sequence, especially for an elf. Like,
right. Because with an elf, you're choosing someone forever.
For
right?
it. And
right.
if, whether and they're so, into you or not. Yes.
Right. Like, you're allowed to make a choice and be like, and 10,000 years from now, we might feel differently about things, but we
right.
made our choice. Yeah. So the fact that she's like, yeah, it's only been 5 years, but you're different. So you know what? I'm done here. That
right. And he's
is very
cute.
Un-elvish.
Right. Yeah. It's no, it's yeah, not.
The, and he's cute part is even worse. Because
it's worse.
Like,
yes. Yeah. Much worse. Yeah.
Like, how long is Turin going to be cute?
Exactly.
From an Elvis perspective, like, right. not very long.
Right. Mm. Right. For a rather fleeting satisfaction. Yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, I'm sure he'll be distinguished old man Turin if he had lived to that age, but the
right.
point is, yeah,
right.
yeah. It's,
yeah.
Yeah, so I like giving her a reason to have split with Gwyndor over, like, we are fundamentally different people and not partners and not making decisions together, so that when he comes back, she's like, I got nothing for you.
So yeah. if she's so all-fired against impetuosity, why Turin?
There is that problem.
So because, like...
Or does she have a type? Because she actually does like impetuous guys. She just hates the
she consequences.
She
just wants to control them. Oh, yeah, that's... that. Okay, so that's interesting. So...
This is getting better and better.
I don't know.
Like, well, and Turin's not going off to fight a foreign war either. Like,
he's defending Nargothrond.
Right. Yeah. The war has come to Nargothrond. It's here now.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, we should probably, and here this is me being the voice of reason. There's a lot to hash out about Finduilas and Turin. Now is probably not the time.
Okay. Right. Well, I just want to make sure that we're not making a choice for our future.
Agreed.
For our
no, it's relevant. And that's why I think cutting her loose earlier like this helps. Like, whatever
yes.
we do, it will help us. Right?
Yes.
If basically what we're showing with Gwyndor and Finduilas is if the backstory there, when we get to Turin, is not the two of us were in love and we were like definitely going to be married. We were only just waiting and now it's all gone, right? If that's not the story, if the story was we like, you know, talked about it, like it was kind of a thing, but we
yeah.
decided against it, then that changes, I think, in really good ways. Certainly for Finduilas'
yeah.
character.
And I mean, if this were a modern story, like to have her like give back her engagement ring.
Right.
Has like I because I don't think they do they don't exchange rings for engagement, do they?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, well, okay. Finrod's ring, right? Yeah,
yeah. Okay. There's all sorts of rings.
All right,
she gives
back her engagement ring. Like, there's a level of finality to that mm-hmm. It's not a foregone conclusion that when he comes back that everything's going to be fine now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, the presumption of the opposite. And
yeah.
And here's another thing that I think is also introduces a dynamic that I think could bear good fruit later in the Turin story. And that is not only that we make her, you know, we kind of create difficulties for Gwyndor and Finduilas, for the two of them, right? But also, or as far as her acceptance of him. But if Gwyndor is carrying a lot of guilt about his decision not to go with Finrod, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to be, that's going to get tied up with his love for Finduilas,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, he is going, in his mind, his love for Finduilas led to a bad thing. Like, it bore
yeah.
bad fruit in his life,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. It's not like it's her fault. He's not blaming her and saying it's, you know, it's, you know, it's not like he, you know, he has come to hate her because it was all her fault that
yeah,
he didn't.
But
go.
It's,
he might, it's not like
and
that
when,
at all.
When he comes back, he might even be like ashamed to re-pursue her, like, 'cause it would take
yes.
a pursuit.
Yes.
Get this relationship that we're constructing. It would now because it's not a foregone conclusion, it would take a pursuit to win her back.
Yes.
And he's embarrassed by who he is now.
Yeah.
First thing. He's still carrying some, like, resentment towards her for not wanting him to go with Finrod in the first place.
Or at least feeling that his love for her was not a good and a thoroughly good and admirable thing in him, as it led him to do a thing he's ashamed of.
Right. Right.
So it'd be more of a rejection of his own love for her rather than a rejection of her personally. Right.
Right.
Like a blaming of her.
Right. Yeah.
It's like,
So this is a definite shift in his understanding of what their relationship even was.
Yes, potentially.
During the season, he's going to have to be in love with her, right?
Yes.
Like, if there's an engagement ring or an engagement or a discussion of that sort of thing, he was into her, and he thought she was the one for him, and that they were going to be together forever unless he did something impetuous.
And she might have a real foreboding. Like, that might be a real thing, that she is a foreboding both times.
If you go, this
is going to go badly.
Yeah.
And she would not be wrong in either case.
Right.
She's in the Silmarillion.
Right. So when they meet again, she can make the case that, look, it's not just that I didn't want you to go. Like, he's going to be like, hey, lady, you were mad at me for going off to war. Well, I got news for you. Turin is 10 times more warlike than I was.
That's right.
Like, there's no comparison. So where do you get off on this? And she says, that wasn't the problem, dude. Right.
You should not do this specific thing. Yeah, and he's like, I'm going to do this specific thing.
Right, exactly. Yes. I'm not against warlikeness in general. I just didn't want you to go.
Right.
And
in
guess
fact,
what?
She's kind of into it, actually.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, for Findulis's background, her parents are Ordreth and Meryl, who are not warlike people.
No.
By any stretch. And she's been raised with some sheltering from the hardships of Beleriand.
Yeah.
But she was
shockingly grew up with a proclivity for bad boys who impetuously like war.
Yeah, well, her brother is Gil-galad.
Right.
So, I don't know what that means, but...
I don't know either yet.
Gil-galad's not a particularly warlike guy.
Not yet, anyway, yeah.
Well, even ultimately, like... No. He's involved in the Last Alliance, but like that feels like that very, very last option on his list of options.
No, he's actually an amazingly good king and the only High King of the Noldor who actually
stays
High King of the Noldor for any length of time. Yeah. So it's like they finally got a good one in him.
Right.
But where I was going was they were both there at the fall of Tol Sirion. So when Sauron took Tol Sirion, they had to flee from that. So she has experienced war directly.
Yes.
At this point in the story. That's all I wanted to say.
Yep.
I wasn't going to psychoanalyze her interest in Gwyndor and or Turin at this point.
Yes. Yeah. No, I yes, agreed.
D-Rod Curry points out that Gil-galad did have the advantage of being the only post-Morgoth High King of the Noldor.
It had a lot to do with his longevity, I'm sure.
It was easier to have a long and peaceful reign during a very long period of peace, admittedly.
Yes. Yes.
But, yes.
But you kind of get the feeling that that Fingolfin or even Finrod would not have stood for the Numenorean incursions into Middle-earth.
It is a fascinating thought experiment, how they would have... How the Second Age would have been different if
Fingolfin
had
survived.
Been king.
Yeah,
yeah.
But anyway.
that is different. The where we need to go with this is we need to figure out how we're going to work Gwyndor into this story at all, because we could come up with a whole very elaborate thing of his relationship with Finduilas and all this decision making, but like, seriously, when is this dude going to be on screen?
Okay, so
that's
in
the
interest of
how
that,
do we fit him?
Let's establish the minimum things we need to accomplish with Gwyndor.
Yeah,
right, or like about Gwyndor. right? We need to accomplish, A, his love for Finduila, says there's been no hint of that.
Right. The audience does not know about this yet.
Okay. So there has we have to establish that Gwyndor and Finduilas are a thing. We have to establish, I think it would be good for us to incorporate into, now, fortunately, we also need Gwyndor to decide to go to the Dagor Bragalach. Oh, sorry, to the Nirnaeth Ornediad. He was already at the Dagor Bragalach. Right? He has to decide to go to the Nirnaeth. Right. And so in that context, we'll have the opportunity to bring in Finduilas and potentially to lay the foundation for their like breakup, which is going to, you know, have extended ripples in a season or two when Turin gets there. So I think that those things, like his status within the court, so that because we don't want him to look like just like some random Nargothrond guy. Right, like, he, because he's also.
Well, he can't be some random guy because, with the king says Nargothrond's not taking part in this, and he says, "By the way, I'm taking a contingent of our soldiers, and I am taking part." He has to have enough authority to even put that idea on the table.
Right, right, exactly. So that his involvement needs to make sense. Yeah. And so therefore we do need to establish his position. And it's also important for us to establish that for the sake of setting up when he returns and what he's returning to and what his return means to Nargothrond and to Orodreth, right? So, yeah. So yes, we have to establish his political position and his decision to go, which will connect explicitly with his brother's capture, right, and his desire to avenge his brother. Implicitly, I think, with his failure of Finrod. And his desire to kind of make up for that. And also the aftermath of that with Finduilas and his relationship so that we're prepared for the
fallout.
Hiatus at best, termination at worst of his romance with Finduilas so that we know where we stand with that when we get back with Turin there at the end. So
basically, any time that we're involving Nargothrond in the main story, Gwyndor has to be around. So there's got to be at least one episode early in the season where Nargothrond is featured. And there we can establish Gwyndor's relationship with Orodreth and his relationship with Finduilas. And then he's present at the council with Orodreth.
Yes.
Right? Which is later in the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's mandatory that he be present.
He goes to the summit meeting with Orodreth.
Right.
Yeah.
And then late, like near when the battle is about to be joined, there's the scene where he's going to march out with a bunch of guys, and there's the confrontation between him and Finduilas. In contrast to Finduilas, one might have Gil-galad kind of arm him to kind of, in a way, say, we, the royal family, recognize that this is not a wholly incorrect way to deal with this situation. We are not going to officially
sanction
joining ourselves with the Feanorians after what happened. However, we recognize that this is kind of something that, you know, this is something that's gonna happen, and you have our
There's permission involved.
Right. You have not our support, but
permission. It would go as far as permission.
There's a word I'm looking for in particular, but I can't think of it at the moment. Our blessing, I guess, is closer to what I'm going for.
Mm-hmm. A little more than permission, a little less than support.
Right.
My only question is condemned and sanctioned. To what extent do we want to open the Gil-galad can of worms here?
I'm happy to discuss what we're doing with him, because...
Because he doesn't go.
Well...
Couldn't he? No,
here's the thing. Like, the problem is he has to survive.
He has to survive.
Right. So he cannot be with Gwyndor charging at Thangorodrim, because anybody who does that is dead or captured. So we can't put Gil-galad with Gwyndor.
Yeah, that story is definitely better if none of them make it back.
Right. So what that means is if Gil-galad participates in the Nirknife, we need to have a survival strategy for him. And if he does not participate, and therefore will survive, which is helpful, then we have to figure out why he's not participating. What is he doing instead? Because he's not going to just sit in Nargothrond and ignore the Nirknife.
I think that what he does is he recognizes this is kind of like the beginnings of the political mind of Gil-galad, right? He recognizes that to directly go against his father's wishes is going to the government in Nargothrond is not the most stable thing at this time, and he recognizes that if he chooses to go, that will be tantamount to a coup.
And that's not a... Yeah, I mean, there was in fact a coup in Nargothrond, which makes it unique among the elf kingdoms in that way, right? Yes, politically unstable is certainly true. Yes. I actually love G.D. Taurian's suggestion about him joining the Navy with Círdan.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the option of who survives the Nirknife is Círdan survives. So if he's with Círdan, he's not going to be in danger.
That's
at
easy.
Point.
Yep.
Yeah, and he's playing a support role, because Círdan's role is presumably going to be troop movements and supplies and all that sort of thing. The other option is that he was previously the ambassador to Doriath for the High King. It didn't go great for him. Mm-hmm. He did have to read Celegorm's letter to Thingol. I'm not sure he's ever welcome in Doriath again, but he could play a role in whatever Doriath's connection to all this is. He could be trying to foster a better one.
I feel on the one, it's hard because I don't want to go too far out of our way to shoehorn Gil-galad in everywhere, but I feel like if we don't.
He's
going to be the High King who comes out of nowhere, right?
So here's the other option. There is somebody else who survives the Nirknife, and that's Turgon, and everybody who goes back to Gondolin with Turgon. Mm-hmm. And we were already planning on taking some of Fingon's people, including Rogrin, and going back, having him retreat with
but
them.
But those are Fingon's people. Like, that's a different group
entirely. But
if Gil-galad is with Fingon at the Nirknife, I'm just saying, we're going to put him with Círdan. We could put him with Fingon. Like, all we have to do is put him now with Gwyndor.
But why is he not leading the people of Nargothrond?
Because he's Fingon's ambassador, has a role with Fingon. Like, if Fingon's using him for something, then it's whatever.
All we need is to give him another job to do. I don't think that's hard. What
but
I want
to
do...
If he retreats to Gondolin, then he's in Gondolin till the fall of Gondolin. Right. And that gets him out of the rest of our stories of why is Gil-galad just hanging out in Nargothrond and not helping the fall of Nargothrond.
Do we want him out of Nargothrond for later? Seems like he may be.
I was going to say
I want
that.
Him out of Nargothrond for Turin, for sure. Yeah. But that...
Yes.
But it
there's
seems...
There's out of Nargothrond, and then there's in Gondolin. These are different things.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, it's just more like the extreme end of the not in Nargothrond spectrum.
I've never seen in Nargothrond again.
I think that actively giving him a political role in this scenario is, to me, seems like a better job of setting up his character for later.
Well, we've got to build his resume, too. I mean, look.
Right.
One consequence of making him not the son of Fingon is that right now, I mean, like, right now, if we just took the characters still alive right now, and we made a list of succession, right? How far down that bloody list is Gil-galad right now? I mean, seriously. I know lots of people are going to die, so we'll get a, you know, he would move up the list. But seriously, like, he's nobody right now. He's
right. He's nobody. Literally nobody right now.
He's he's the child of Orodreth. Who cares about Orodreth? Anyway, it's just, it's weird. Like,
so that's maybe true. Having get, like, him the... be like Turgon's kind of protege.
That would be one option. That would be one option.
He because could be like the ambassadorship to Malta or something.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that Turgon is going to become High King after Fingon, and that makes sense. They're both on that battlefield together. Fingon dies, Turgon survives. Okay, whatever. Turgon's High King now. But how do you be High King of the Elves from In Gondolin when you can't talk to anybody? It's like, whatever. But if Gil-galad is there and has a relationship with Turgon and understands Turgon's view of Fingolfin and Fingon's lives, that would give Gil-galad a much more unique position to be Turgon's heir.
Yes.
Because Turgon doesn't have an heir. I mean, obviously he has Idril. And
gives
he has
us the opportunity to have a scene with Gil-galad at the tomb of Fingolfin.
Yes.
True.
Which helps establish him as a successor.
Yeah. So, but in my mind, the biggest downside, and this would be a very significant downside of having Gil-galad in Gondolin, is that I think we would run a very significant risk of pushing Idril aside as a character. Because if he is there basically becoming, at least in the eyes of our viewers, if not in the eyes of Turgon himself, the Turgon's logical successor as High King, should any, you know, towers collapse with him in it or anything, then, like, who's, like, what
well,
role
would
he have to play in the fall of Gondolin? He would have
Gil-galad
to oppose Turgon's isolationism. He would have to oppose Turgon's... He would have to, like, be on Tuor's side and uncomfortable with Turgon's final decision. He would have to escape with them out of Gondolin. And that, like, all of those things kind of put him in...
Idril's shoes.
Right. They put him in... And we'd have to give to him a lot of speeches, which otherwise we would give to Idril.
Wait. Can I say this real quick? Why does he have to be against Turgon's decisions rather than learning from the results of them?
He could be. We just have to make him not look like a git.
And he has to end up on Idril's side enough to be part of the escape plan.
Well, it. But
so
the
he
thing
has
is
to,
that
be,
giving,
to end there.
Giving Turgon an interlocutor in that situation who is not fighting against him gives us the opportunity for Turgon to kind of contextualize his point of view.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So but, that we could illustrate that that Turgon is not just an idiot.
Right.
Also, it gives Maeglin more motivation because Maeglin was all about becoming Turgon's heir. And Idril wasn't going to be it. So Maeglin's like, great, I'm the nephew of the king. Here I am sitting in Gondolin. It's just me. And then as soon as this random new guy comes along and Turgon's like, ah, little protege, Maeglin's like, what am I? It's like, ah, yes,
right.
Nephew.
But see, even there, now we're displacing some of Maeglin's animosity towards Gil-galad, which would otherwise be dedicated to Idril and Tuor.
Yeah, well, yeah. I was going to have this too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, why would Maeglin care at all about Tuor? You should be concerned about
Gil-galad, yeah. Exactly. I mean, it would be a separate thing. It'd be like, oh, man, first somebody comes and takes my spot as, like, Turgon's right-hand dude, and then some other schmo comes and steals my incestuous love. Like, come on! Like, I can't do anything right, right?
Yeah, that's pretty good. it does kind of... It seems like he has unavoidably becomes a character in that story, right? Like, it's no longer Tuor and Idril versus Maeglin. Now it's Tuor, Idril, and Gil-galad versus...
I think with Maeglin and Idril, Turgon has enough interlocutors to go on with as far as establishing those things. Mm. And Tuor. I mean, he's got, and not to mention Ecthelion and Glorfindel and...
Like that whole season, like that whole storyline, so much of it is taking place in Gondolin. So, like, we kind of need to have, because remember, our cast of thousands is going to get whittled down real quick.
Right.
Right.
Well, not in Gondolin.
Right. Well, that's the this one kind of after. But also, not to add another person to this list of people who wind up in Gondolin, I saw something recently where, at least in some version of the story, Celebrimbor winds up in Gondolin. Was that even a thing at any point?
It's the whole making of the Elisar.
The Elisar, yeah, that's where from. Yeah,
that's from that story. Yeah. But
because we could credit Celebrimbor with the anti-Balrog technology under influence from a certain someone who also influences him later. I'm just saying.
Well, that's going to be hard to work into the story at all at this point, because now Sauron is in Bree and Celebrimbor is in Nargothrond.
Sauron is in Bree, i.e. the political center of the continent.
It's fine. It's fine.
We have time to discuss what's going on there.
But no, Gil-galad... My main point with Gil-galad, he needs to build his resume, right? Now, I do like G.D. Taurian's point that when Turgon is the High King, he is a High King in isolation. So, somebody has to be the de facto High King of the rest of the elves who are not in Gondolin. And if that's the moment when Gil-galad is beginning to sort of emerge and establish himself, so that... That's how he becomes, rather than being the logical heir of Turgon through Turgon, a relationship with Turgon, he becomes the one sort of outside.
Yeah.
That also works.
And we obviously will eventually need to develop his relationship with Círdan, so why not start now?
I still like that, but I do...
But we need him to not be in Nargothrond when it gets sacked.
We need him... Well, obviously we need him to survive and not survive by, running away on the battlefield or something. So I agree. I don't think we want him anywhere near the battlefield, anywhere near Glaurung, right? Or else how does Glaurung kill Orodreth and not Gil-galad, right? So I agree. That's a big problem. I think it would be problematic to have Gil-galad there with Turin there. Again, I'm wanting to preserve build his resume
dynamic
and preserve his integrity, right?
Yeah.
That is, I would rather not have Gil-galad be the one that everyone's like, this guy is a schmo and an idiot. I just don't like that.
Because no matter where he stands on Turin, he looks like an idiot.
Yes.
Right? If he thinks if he is pushing back against Turin, then he's kind of a coward. Like, everybody who pushes back against Turin in Nargothrond comes off looking weak.
Yes.
Even if they're right.
Even if they're right. Exactly.
Yeah. And
also
like
impotent because Turin wins.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. When Glaurung shows up, anybody who supported Turin looks like an idiot.
Yeah.
But
totally.
But that doesn't wipe out all of the weakness that the people who were against him were showing.
Yes.
Right. So we don't want Gil-galad there for any of that.
No. I don't think we
do. We either need to give him a project to work on or another place in the world to be.
Such as now, I know it's on the one hand, it might seem like this is not a question we have to answer now, but I kind of want to because it's a near-ninth question, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it has to have near-ninth implications because if he's not going to be in Nargothrond, this is why I found the idea of stashing him in Gondolin really tempting for a few minutes there because that gets him out of the way very nicely.
Yeah.
I just don't like what it does to the Gondolin story. Like, the more I think about it, the less I like the impact of that. But,
so, I think having him quietly support the expedition to the Nir-Ninth and then almost come into conflict with Turin when Turin comes to Nargothrond and have Orodreth send him off to Círdan or something of that nature, like... I feel like that's the safest way to go for him while giving him things to do.
But there are theoretical things to do. I feel like stashing him with Círdan makes all the sense in the world, but it's also tantamount to just ditching him.
But he can still become as somebody was mentioning earlier, kind of the de facto High King out there in the real world.
Right.
Eventually. Not for a few seasons yet. Which is fine. He's young. We don't need him to be doing amazing
but
things.
But as more and more people show up there, every time that people show up there, we're getting more. Yeah. We're building onto the Gil-galad mythos.
So I have a.
Goes back to the mouth of Sirion question.
It does go back to the mouth of Sirion question.
When do we put Gil-galad at the mouth of Sirion?
Yeah, and by the way, I will totally pretend like I was foreboding this entire conversation when I asked that question. But I'm just going to raise. I'm not saying that this because I think it's a good idea, but it's the only thing we haven't talked about, and I think we. What if he's in Doriath? That's the other place to put him.
Yeah, he was the ambassador.
He was the ambassador to Doriath.
So he has a reason to be there.
If he's sent back to Doriath, we could because the one
where
place
where he fails to get Thingol on board.
Well, but no, like, but that's a Thingol story.
But maybe Thingol was never going to get on board.
No.
But what can Doriath do to support the Nirnaeth?
Yeah.
And the obvious answer is allow communication between East and West.
Yeah.
So if Gil-galad is able to open up...
Oh, if he's the Pony Express.
Yes. If he's able to get messages through Doriath, that would have a huge impact on planning the war, so he'd play a significant role. Thingol would still be Thingol and would not change his stance on Feanorians or war.
Yeah.
But if he agrees to the communication, that's a key way of supporting.
So Gil-galad lays the Trans-Doriath cable. Okay.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
And he scores a big diplomatic win.
Which is good for his resume, for his high kingly resume later.
Can he also run around with Mablung or Beleg and engage in some heroics?
They're going to go join the war.
But
they're people who survived the war and come back.
That's true.
He could go with them. Yeah. And they could escort him back.
So he could be there.
That's some prime resume building.
He could be there and still wind up in Gondolin, we're just saying.
Or wind up back in Doriath.
Yeah.
If he's hanging out with people who come back, then we've got a vehicle for him to come back.
Okay.
The other long-term benefit of having him in Doriath is that Doriath is the blankest of slates when it comes to what's going to happen later on, right? Okay, I don't mean it's the blankest of all slates. The mouths of Sirion are the blankest of all of the slates.
Yes.
But it's the second blankest. I mean, we don't know most of the details of the story of how it's going to go down. We have a lot of flexibility with how we handle what devolves in Doriath in the later years.
Okay.
And so, unlike in Gondolin, where we already have a really clear structure in place, and the addition of a major figure like Gil-galad really messes with dynamics we already have pretty clear in our head, right? As far as Turgon, Idril, Maeglin, Tuor.
Yeah, yeah.
In Doriath, things are as muddy as could possibly be as to what the dynamics are. So we've got some room for somebody like Gil-galad to possibly be there and stay. He could come to the mouths of Sirion he could bring the people from Doriath down there, and that's how he arrives.
Doriath also seems like the number one place to go and absorb wisdom.
Hang with Melian while you can.
It depends on whom the wisdom is being absorbed from.
Yeah, but Melian is there indeed.
Yeah.
So then that would solve things for this season. Where is Gil-galad? He's in Doriath. We will have to eventually answer the question of how do we get him out of Doriath? Because if he's there all the way until the refugees leave, then that means he is there for both the dwarves attacking and the Feanorians attacking. So he would be involved in two sacks of Doriath.
But I think
we could do. Well, there's room, but I'm just saying we might want to think through before we leave.
Yeah, I'm not saying I have a plan for that, just that it's muddy enough
and
we can figure it out.
There. We can decide he's there now and then decide later if he leaves or goes or somewhere else.
Yeah, the benefit of Doriath over Gondolin is he can leave.
He can leave. Right. Yes. Yes.
If we put him in Gondolin, it's a pretty permanent decision. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess that means we should clear whether or not Celebrimbor is going to Gondolin. I know that was only vaguely suggested. Celebrimbor is currently in Nargothrond. He's best buds with Orodreth. but we have no idea where he goes after this until the Second Age. So stashing him in Gondolin is, I guess, an option.
And, of course, this is a very directly related to Gil-galad question.
Shouldn't there be a sliding doors thing here, right? Like, something's different here that sets these guys on somewhat different paths, making different decisions about Annatar and those sorts of things.
So, all right, let me ask the Celebrimbor question a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Where does he go if not Gondolin?
Again,
he doesn't hang with the Fëanorians. We know that.
No,
he's still
in
Nargothrond.
That.
He's already separate, right?
He's not going to go back to Nargothrond because we don't want him to.
We're not going
to
have him there when Turin's there, are we?
I was about to say, we need to get him out of there before Turin shows up.
Why can't he?
Because Glaurung. Because we don't want him to be eaten by a dragon.
Well, some people survive, but still.
Not everyone gets eaten.
Yeah. It's less bad for him than Gil-galad. Gil-galad is absolutely terrible because his father and his sister both die. So if he skedaddles out the door while the dragon is coming in and leaves his whole family to die, like, he's a terrible person. Celebrimbor could be on the battlefield and just survive the battle and run away, I guess.
And because, I mean, G.D. Tarion does point out we do need somebody to lead the refugees from Nargothrond to Balar, and
it could be Celebrimbor.
Would it?
Yeah, but that means that Celebrimbor is then there at every single council meeting where it's Turin putting his ideas there and Ordreth getting steamrolled, and he's Ordreth's friend. So
yeah,
it would change the dynamics a little bit with Celebrimbor if he's there for all of that.
I think he meets Punisher at the Near Ninth and decides to go back to Gondolin. I think that's the...
I'm not opposed to the Gondolin idea. I do think it's possible. I definitely agree having Celebrimbor there throughout the Turin experience at Nargothrond is so much easier and better than having Gil-galad there. Because also, don't forget, although he's a close friend with Ordreth, he's a Fëanorian and knows it, right? He's not gonna like, part of his own, like, self-imposed penance for his father's actions is going to be like, he's going to be super, super careful not to usurp the throne, but not even to be seen to be a power in Nargothrond. Right. Yeah. I don't think he talks much at the councils. He might not even go.
Right. He's a craftsman.
He might be off in his lab. Right.
Which would be how we would have to handle him if he were in Gondolin. How would he not mess up the dynamics of everything there? Has nothing to do with it.
He's
in
too
a forge somewhere.
Busy inventing anti-Balrog swords.
And magic gems.
We were gonna let Maeglin invent some of this stuff.
See, that's my other problem. That's, to me, that's the biggest obstacle, is that he's a Maeglin problem again. Mm. Because now, like, Maeglin becomes the second greatest craftsman in Gondolin, basically. Mm. Right.
Yes. If you put Celebrimbor there, yes.
Exactly. So, and like, it's once again, like, yet an, like, Maeglin, like, poor Maeglin, right? Like, is like just one upped on every front, everywhere. And again, I don't want to muddy Maeglin's story. You know what I mean? And I feel like that would a little bit potentially.
And he, Celebrimbor, it seems like it's sort of okay if he just gets sent over to Círdan, doesn't it? Because
Celebrimbor
doesn't. Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's what you said. I'm confused why he would go to Círdan.
Well, I'm just thinking, where could we send him? He doesn't have the same requirement that he needs to build a resume. Like,
no,
like,
it's fine if he is
not involved in anything.
Mm.
Yeah.
To a point, yes. I mean, he's an equally significant Second Age character, but a different type of character, surely.
Yeah, yeah. Right. His leadership of the Elves of Eregion, it's not like he's not a king in the normal sort of way.
Right. No, he gathered a bunch of craftsmen to himself. Well, he's a great craftsman. He makes the elven rings. It's pretty cool stuff.
It's a big deal.
What he's not good at is character and reading people. So, yeah, he could maybe not see through Turin. That's fine. Like, that's within Celebrimbor's character.
I could see putting, if we keep him in Nargothrond, I could see giving him a role in the Turin story, which is basically he doesn't come to the councils because he doesn't want to make anybody uncomfortable, like no Fëanorians in the King's Council. And so instead, he's off in his lab, but Ordreth hangs out with him, right? So there'd be like, he would be like the personal friend and advisor of Ordreth, but he doesn't speak in the councils, right? So he'd be the one where Ordreth comes to him and is like, oh, I don't know. And Celebrimbor's like, you know, supporting Ordreth and could give him bad advice about Turin.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Should we give him, let him trust the wrong person again?
You know, like it's...
It would be
like it's out of character.
His character, because nothing about Celebrimbor says good at choosing...
choosing friends wisely. Except for Ordreth. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, but if anything, Ordreth is one of the weakest kings among the Noldor. So he's a good guy, and Celebrimbor is right to be friends with him, but there's nothing about that partnership that is going to, like, save the world.
Right. Yeah. No.
This Turinot guy, he's got great ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so Celebrimbor can stay and Nargothrond for now.
I think he can stay.
Do we want him to take part in the Nirnaeth or not? Because he would have less compunctions about fighting with Fëanorians, you would think. On this other hand, he did very publicly disown them all. So
he wants to just... Yeah, I would, and I think especially if we're going to move him in the direction of kind of...
Not a power
and, you know, kind of loner. Almost. Not loner because he's still friends with Ordreth, but, you know.
Outside of the council.
Yeah, outside of the council. I think it'd be weird for him to go if that's going to be his role later on. But
So it is just Gwyndor and some guys going up.
Yes.
Okay, which is fine.
Want Gil-galad to go with Mablung and Beleg?
I vote yes.
I admit that I'm tempted because I think having Gil-galad at the Nirnaeth is kind of resume building. Just a little bit of resume building for Gil-galad. That he was at least there. That he has seen all of the major events of the First Age that he was around for, you know?
We haven't decided what we're even doing with these guys yet, right?
But we don't know. But I do really like that Elrond was at the Last Alliance and saw the host of the Valar that broke Thangorodrim with his own eyes, right? Like, he saw both those things.
Yes.
And, like, when he says that in Lord of the Rings, it's like, oh, this guy really has been around a long time, and he really does know what he's talking about. And it would be nice to give Gil-galad some of that going into the
second kind of experience, yes.
Of the, this guy was at those major battles in the First Age, not just he heard about them, because most of the people aren't going to survive these battles. So when we get to the Second Age, there's not going to be a lot of firsthand witnesses of Dagor Bragollach.
And it's one of the things that I thought that I find a little bit disappointing about how Gil-galad is handled in the published Silmarillion is that it's like, and now the High King is this sheltered dude who's never seen anything or done anything. Right.
Right, because, I mean, it was the easiest way to handle it. But.
Yeah, it was. Again, I'm not blaming Christopher. It's not his fault. But it's hard.
But it is a disappointment.
Somebody needs to teach him how to handle a spear.
Yeah, exactly.
Such stuff like that, yeah. So we don't really know what Beleg and Mablung are doing. That's one of the things to discuss in our minor storylines, is how do they end up at the Nirnaeth when no one else in Doriath does? So if we're going to put Gil-galad in Doriath, he's going to have to tie into whatever that story is. So whatever their story is of how they get there, we'll have to see if he can fit into it.
Okay. Well, we'll have to talk about that and then circle back to this particular question. It'd be nice. Mm-hmm. And again, if he comes with Mablung and Beleg, he at least has a clear pathway to survival. Mm-hmm. Whatever theirs is. Not that we know that either, but...
Yeah, but we have to make one for them, so he just tags along with whatever that is.
Yeah, exactly. So that, it does give us an easy out in that way. Okay. And I'm totally not worried... Just circle back for the last time to the Celebrimbor question. Totally not worried about, like... I don't feel any pressure to put him in Gondolin because of the Alessar thing. Like, that's a really... out there reference as far as that is on the raggedy edge of the Tolkien canon. Right. So yeah.
By the way, we got a little. If we send Gil-galad to this battle with like Mount Blung and Beleg and like some other Doriath elves, we got a little bit of a Aragorn and Grey Company thing going on.
Yes. And if Gwyndor and Finduilas break up before we go, we have a little bit of Arwen telling Aragorn to keep the little necklace because, you know, it was a gift going on from the Peter Jackson movies. So, you know. Just a little bit.
Yep. Okay. All right. So, I'm feeling good about Gwyndor. I feel best about actually having a clearer path in mind for Finduilas and the relationship with Gwyndor. That's always something that's troubled me, and I feel good about creating some relationship strife before he leaves. That I think solves a lot of problems. I was not anticipating talking about Gil-galad in that way, but I'm glad that we did, because it's really the Doriath option. Leaves, because, you know, we talked about sending with Círdan, but of course that leaves the Círdan door wide open, like him establishing a relationship with Círdan. That's going to be easy to do if he's connected to Doriath.
Right. The refugees of Doriath and Círdan would have a clear connection later on.
Exactly.
If we went that route.
Yeah. Because, by the way, that's not even obvious. Like, when Doriath is sacked again, like, when we come to the final sacking of Doriath, right? It's not even a no-brainer that the refugees of Doriath are going to go down to the Havens. They could go like to Osiriand. They could go like they're not conceivably like they. You could argue that they have at least as strong connections to the east as they do to the south, right?
Right. The Green Elves, yeah.
Having that kind of a connection, having someone of some persuasiveness near them or among them who knows them and who is from outside and can reach out to them and knows them, or somebody who's with them and can bring them. In either case, having that kind of a connection through Gil-galad to the Havens seems like a good idea. Seems like that will pay off later.
Okay.
Okay. My final piece of Gil-galad digression. Do we have a backstory for Aigwas yet?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
When
is he going to have Aigwas forged and why? That needs a backstory.
It does, but does it need to be in the first age, or can that be a second age story?
It could be. My argument... So it'd be a little bit disappointing if Aigwas is like... custom made for the Last Alliance. Like, it could be cool.
Oh, no. It should be earlier than that.
It should be earlier, but if it's... And so maybe... I think it would be a little bit
now,
awesome.
Can he have a precursor?
Okay, so one option is Celebrimbor is off by himself doing projects in Nargothrond. Could he be making a spear?
Seems like a project he might undertake. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like yes, an and so that spear. Leads to my question of that leads to my
an
question.
Anti Sauron spear that would be nicer,
right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just basically timing. Like, when would we want him to get Aigwas? Because again, I'm thinking forward, right? If he's thinking of the military actions that Gil-galad is going to be in or near in the rest of the First Age, right? He's going to be at the Dagor at the Nirnaeth, but it's too late to make Aigwas before that. Reasonably speaking, I mean, we'd be rushing it terribly if we were just
here.
Like,
if you want Celebrimbor to make it this season and give it to him before the end of the season, we can definitely do that.
It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right because if he goes to the Nirnaeth, he's going to go as a quasi spectator, right?
Okay.
And
well,
and
not directly sent by Orc,
and but. Certainly not in like a leadership position in the battle. And so, like, oh, I hear you're going to be near a battlefield. Here's your spear of destiny. Seems weird, right? Like, it doesn't feel like the moment for it.
Okay. Can he have it at the War of Wrath?
Definitely could have it at the War of Wrath. And he's going to be... So he's not going to be at Nargothrond. He's not going to be at the Fall of Gondolin. He can be involved, potentially, at the Fall of Doriath.
But again, not a planned event.
Not a planned event, and not something he'd be in a leadership position for, at least the first time.
Could Iglis be in Thingol's treasury? Because there's a lot of weapons that are just stashed there. And if he's leading people out of Doriath when it's being sacked, he could grab a big spear for that for some reason. I don't know why he'd pick that one, but whatever.
Spear of Destiny, you know. You
yeah,
need a reason.
Exactly.
I kind of like the idea of him rallying the survivors and leading them out of Doriath.
Mm-hmm.
Like not like fearfully running away, but like heroically saving people and retreating.
Yeah. Well, we're...
And grabbing a spear on his way out.
We're going to more or less run out of Doriath characters.
We're going to kill a bunch of them off, yeah.
Yeah.
Sacking the city twice kind of does that.
Exactly. There's going to be some casualties. So having him around to be the leader of them, I think, is... Oh, and I would add to Adola, and somebody else mentioned this earlier before, I have no problems with Go'Galad meeting young Turgon in Doriath. I don't see any downside to that.
Wait, who? Turin.
Turin. No, yeah. Did I say Turgon?
Okay.
Sorry. Turin.
Maybe.
Young Turin in Doriath. Yeah. I don't think having him in Nargothrond with Turin is a problem. Having him meet young Turin in Doriath, I think, is totally fine.
I don't see an issue with that either.
Yeah. That's just bonus, if nothing else. So I think that's totally fine. Okay. So maybe Iglaus for his battles, for battles that he may take part in Doriath. If so, well, Celebrimbor is going to be around. So if we want Celebrimbor to make it, we can do that almost any time.
I don't know that we want Celebrimbor to make it.
I
only suggested it as, if you want it forged this season as a special thing.
Yeah.
He seemed the likely person to do so, but
for sure.
We don't have any indication whether it was made by elves or dwarves or
no,
anything,
we don't.
Right? So it could come from anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be a big spear, but other than that.
Yeah. I would love to have more story for Iglaus, but we don't have to develop the whole Iglaus story right now. I just wanted to think about it in conjunction with the idea of Go'Galad being at a battle. So, because if he's going to be at a battle and not have his spear, we need to make like we understand why that is true, basically.
Well, if it's just coming out of Doriath anyway, if it was just laying around there and he's in Doriath leaving for a battle, he could arm himself with weapons
so
at that time.
I should clarify something. Everyone should have a spear.
I know they should.
I know your spear thing. Yeah, I it's true.
Everyone should have one.
Right. But Iglaus can't be like army issue spear.
No. It's not a standard issue spear, obviously. Yeah. But like, and you can consider that an axiom. Everyone should have a spear.
I hear you.
Well, if we're sending Mablung, Beleg, and Gil-galad together, Beleg's got his really famous bow, and Mablung has an axe, right? I think? No. Tuor has an axe.
Tuor has an axe.
Mablung, presumably, anyway, he has weapons.
He's got a hand.
I mean, heavy hand.
Like that's, leads me to, I always associated him with a sword because of this, I mean.
Anyway, but yeah, so.
The hand, he's not the heavy hands plural.
He could have,
but anyway.
Heavy sword, and then Gil-galad could have the spear, and then somehow we do something with that. I don't know.
I guess I don't want him to get the spear yet, just because I want Iglaus to be a big deal, and he's
so
taking it
have,
up
have,
to be a big deal.
He could have standard issue army spear in this battle, and then when he's going to fight for real, he gets special spear.
Yeah.
Would that work, Nick?
Sure.
um,
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So
So you're good with Gwyndor and you're good with Gil-galad for minor characters that we need.
I'm good with Gwyndor and I'm good with Gil-galad. Yes.
We've now covered one character on our list from the notes.
We got some serious bonus. And our next topic is the Sindar. So
it was Gwyndor and Nargothrond is what that was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fair enough.
And we've already touched on this, so we might as well finish this one off. We know Thingol's going to refuse.
Yes.
I guess the question is, exactly how hostile are we going to show him? I mean, obviously, his hostility to the Feanorians is very great. But how hostile exactly? I mean, it's one thing to say I'm not going to join, and it's another thing to say I am going to inhibit you.
Right.
Actively.
Right. So the question is, how guilty does Thingol feel about having a Silmaril? Like, he's the one who started the whole quest, and now he's got a Silmaril and a mortal daughter, which is not quite what he had in mind. So, is he having any regrets about that?
I think,
is he like, well, it's mine now, and I don't care where this came from? Like, how possessive is he of his Silmaril?
So, I think that the more the Feanorians ask for it, the more entrenched he becomes. Because Beren and Luthien went through literal hell to get this thing, and I am absolutely not just going to hand it over to these Kinslayers. It is their weregild to me.
And so does he feel guilty? Yes, but we've seen him work through that already, right?
Yeah.
Like, there has been grace bestowed on him, right? And he feels that. Like, when Luthien returns and the winter passes, right? It's like there's been forgiveness that's happened there. And I think even some self-forgiveness there instead. And so that the Silmaril, instead of being the symbol of his guilt, right? Like, basically, congratulations, you now have a gem, and for it, you killed your daughter, right? That's kind of where he was before there was that moment, right, where that's where he was. When she returns, now, there's a downside, as you say. She's mortal now. But I agree that it will have been transformed into this is the material symbol of what Beren and Luthien, of their relationship, of their sacrifice.
Right.
He will revere it.
So he's not entirely possessive yet. I mean, obviously with the whole Naglamyr thing, he's going to become rather possessive.
Yeah.
But right now it's still a pretty healthy relationship with the gem.
Right.
The Feanorians, well, Maedhros is at least probably smart enough not to be demanding it of him publicly.
Yes. No, I don't think that demands will have been made yet, because Maedhros is still in charge.
He must have at least written a strongly worded letter at this point. Like, he can't just not say anything. Really?
No, because Luthien's sacrifice is the thing. It's too soon.
It's too soon.
He's an elf. He's got time. He's allowed to delay the oath. And he's absolutely going to demand that gem, but he doesn't have to do it today.
And in part, the entire union is a stalling mechanism.
Yes. Like, that's the whole point. He's aiming at Morgoth so that he doesn't have to deal with Doriath Silmaril yet.
I mean, there's an available Silmaril, and he's just like, we'll wait on that.
Yes.
To not even ask for it seems...
Nope. He's purposefully avoiding asking for it.
Yeah, because... Okay. If he asks, what's Thingol going to say?
And he knows it.
No. And he...
They all know it.
And once Thingol says no, then he's got to do something about it. If he doesn't ask, he can just be delaying.
Everybody knows it. Kelgorm and Curufin and Caranthir want it, right? They want Thingol to say no, right? Because they want to go after it. Everybody knows Thingol's going to say no, right? Maedhros doesn't want to ask for this reason. And again, like, he's trying to, again, it's just calling the Union of Mothers a stalling tactic is not quite right, but there's an element of that, right? Where there he's, is. I'm trying to divert this entire storm, right? And the only way to divert it, this is the only effective way to divert it, because this is still in keeping
with
the oath. Right. Yeah. We're still pursuing. We're not turning from the oath. We're not even delaying the oath. We're going for the majority of the Silmarils, right, which are up there still. And this is our best chance to do this. This means, I think, by the way, now, Thingol is in it. Thingol also has a corresponding subtlety to. Mythros is doing a subtle political move here by calling the Union instead of demanding the Silmaril. Mm-hmm. Thingol has an opportunity for a subtle response as well. He might not avail himself of it, but he has an opportunity there too, right? If he's working against the Union of Mythros in some sense, right? If he's making himself the enemy of the Feanorians now, actively the enemy, acting as their enemy right now, then he's undermining the work that Mythros is doing in trying to keep the other Feanorians out of animosity with him, right? If Mythros is trying to hold his brothers back to some extent, and Thingol is still going out of his way to smack them in the face, he's not doing a very smart political thing right there. Right.
This seems like a really good point for Gil-galad to argue.
Gil-galad could argue it, right? I understand that you don't want to join with them, King, but maybe not make yourself their enemy right now. Because if you do, like, you know, four or five out of those, they just need an excuse, right? They just need an excuse.
Right. Like, everybody knows about the oath.
And everybody knows about the oath.
If Thingol's sitting there holding a Silmaril, and the oath says, if anyone has it and doesn't give it back to us, like, he's got to know that he's made Doriath a target.
Yes.
The Union of Mythros could just as easily march down here.
Right.
He's got to see that Mythros' attempt to rally the Feanorians and point them north has got to be good for Doriath. It doesn't mean that Thingol is actually living in fear of the Feanorians. He may not be. He probably isn't.
Right, right. Because I mean, the Girdle of Melian will.
Because he thinks
out.
They can't get through the Girdle. Yeah.
Yeah. They think that as well.
Yeah.
Which is why it's not a good idea to make demands right now.
Right.
There's this back and forth where.
Yeah.
They've been friendly in the past, even. Post-reveal of the kinslaying, Mythros and Thingol have been in the same room as each other and were cordial.
Mm-hmm.
It was Galadriel's wedding.
Right.
So they had a reason. But still, we created that scenario
right.
specifically to show that there had been some healing post all of this.
Right.
So I don't think we want Thingol to be like, well, I don't like Feanorians and... you guys can all just go die up there. I don't care. Not only because it wouldn't be politically expedient, but it's not a very good move as king to act like nothing outside of Doriath matters to Doriath.
Yes.
And Beleriand, it, as a whole, is a realm that Thingol has claimed as his own. Not that he's actively doing anything outside of Doriath.
Yes.
But he claims kingship of Beleriand, so he has to want Morgoth defeated at some point. Like, that is a goal. So I think he can be in agreement with the goals of the Union, but be in disagreement with the now is the time rhetoric. Mm. He can be like, I see what you're doing, but I don't think it's the time. I think you're wrong. And that's why I'm not joining. Like, he doesn't have to be, I hate you guys, and that's why I'm not joining.
Yeah.
Even if everyone knows he's not gonna.
Right. Because it does also, seem... He's not an idiot, and he's not just petty. Right? I mean, because you're right. At the very least, if he says, I'm not going to join with any of the other elves. I'm going to sit here and watch all of you burn just because I don't like you. That makes him a fool.
Mm. Or just not a great guy.
Yeah.
Like,
well, just, and a bad king.
Yeah, a bad king, because it's short-sighted.
Yeah.
For his kingdom. If he wants, he was so adamant about protecting the people of Doriath, and ignoring what's going on around you is not a good job of protecting.
It's a bad way to protect the people of Doriath,
right.
For one thing. And certainly the other Sindar outside the borders of Doriath, whom, again, he still does claim kingship over.
Can he actually, just out of curiosity, could he actually march with the Union of Maedhros? Or if there's a bunch of Doriath troops marching around with them, aren't they going to be like, hey, so where's that? What happened to the Somaril? Where is that Somaril?
Thingol's not going to leave Doriath, but...
It seems like if he had a presence, like, it would be a reminder to them of, like, oh, yeah, these guys, they have one, too.
I'm asking myself that question, too. My question is, do we have to send? We've already upped it from 2 to 3. Could we increase it further? Could he send some people? It doesn't have to be, like, he's not going to empty Doriath and show up like Turgon does. But how necessary is it for him to be... We can show him to be playing... to be very cautious. To be sending only a small portion of his force instead of his entire army. He's not pushing all of his chips to the center of the table like Fingon and Maedhros are prepared to do, right? Mm-hmm. He is not all in on this. But that doesn't mean that he's not going to go along at all, necessarily.
Okay. I would not be opposed to Mablung and Beleg having some guys with them, like taking a little contingent, because that seems to make more sense of how one goes to a battle. Like, just literally showing up by yourself feels very strange.
Yes.
So if we want to gray company it with them and give them a little group, we're okay. But the whole point of Doriath doesn't participate is that there was a consequence to the actions of the last season. And that was that Caligorm and Curufin messed up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Nargothrond's not sending people and Doriath's not sending people because of the actions of the Feanorians. And Finrod's dead. Like, Finrod...
Might have
taken Nargothrond and joined.
Yeah.
If Fingon was on board.
And he might even have been able to have that conversation with Thingol. Yeah.
But that didn't happen. And there's a reason it didn't happen. And so the, you know, too few have come kind of thing needs to be at least one note at the council because, yeah, you're not in a position to muster all of Beleriand behind this cause anymore.
Yeah.
Too much has happened.
The problem is, though, I totally see that. And I agree that that's important. But when I look at it from the other side, it's hard.
Thingol has to do something here.
Right.
You can't just sit there and do nothing and be like, you have fun.
Exactly. I mean, it's one thing to... Because, I mean, it makes all kinds of sense to say they acted really badly and there are really bad consequences of that. But what that ends up meaning on the other side is, okay, so yeah, these two people acted badly. And you're not going to be big enough to rise above that for the sake of the security of your people and the future of the continent. Like, you're just going to be like, but I don't care. They sent me a really unpleasant letter. I mean, I know, like, they held his daughter prisoner. Like, it's more than just an insult. Like, not minimizing it, but still, again, it's
when he got that letter, he sent an army to Nargothrond.
Yeah.
Mm.
So he was prepared to do something.
Right.
To save his daughter. But she's not in danger anymore.
Yes.
And his people are still under threat. So what is he going to do to save his people?
Mm.
And saying that they're wrong, I think, is an important stance for him to have.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't have to be, well, you know, you insulted me, so we're done here.
Right.
About it. He doesn't have to be petty. He can have reasons.
Yeah.
And we just have to figure out what he could see in the Union to be like, this is not a good idea, you guys. There are some really bad things coming from this whole thing.
and I can't, in good faith, empty my kingdom for this.
I mean, he could say he doesn't trust the Feanorians without being petty about it.
Mm.
But I don't think it's just I don't trust you personally. I think it has to be some understanding of your venture is doomed.
But
it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. he would have the benefit of being correct. Yeah.
I mean, I got to imagine if he's listening to Melian at all at this point, she's not in support of this, right?
That's where I'm going. It's like he's got the best insight into whether or not this is a good idea sitting right next to him. Does Melian think that Doriath should be supporting the Union of Maedhros?
I mean, I would imagine what she's probably saying is this is a whether she thinks like it's a great idea for everybody to band together and support, she must know this isn't how it goes.
Yeah. Like, so that whole
was not the time, not going
not
to work
time.
Out.
It's not
going to
happen.
So like that the whole push for it, like now is the time, and Fingon is seeing all these signs that this has got to be the right time. Melian is not seeing what Fingon is seeing.
Right.
Mm.
Melian would say, no, it isn't. And Thingol would say, and so if he chooses not to go first and foremost because Melian says this is not going to happen, this is doomed, that gives him a whole lot of slack as far as how he handles the rest of things. Right. Didn't he?
This is where yeah. And you know, that might be a circumstance where if he wasn't personally offended by their actions and didn't mistrust them so deeply, maybe he might be inclined to be like, okay, well, I understand it's not the time, but I feel like I need to do my part. But now he's not even inclined to do that because of what happened, the consequences you mentioned, Marie. But then I wonder if this is where Gil-galad comes in and says, like, well, here's some things you can do. Help with communication. If some of your people say they want to go, don't forbid them.
Or there could be support, right? Like armies need food.
Mm-hmm.
Doriath could be supplying things, and the reason Beleg and Mablung end up there is because they were guarding and supporting some kind of supply train to get up to the front lines.
Mm. That's a fantastic excuse. For them to wind up there.
It is. Well, I mean, especially, again, just geography, right? Nobody's better positioned than Doriath to, support even both sides. Honestly. I love the idea of a volunteer army, right? That Thingol gives permission to anybody who wants to join to do it. And that would enable him to say with perfect truth, diplomatically, that he does not oppose them. He is not going to lead his whole army into the because he does not believe in this. He does not think the time is now. And he can even say, like, dude, my wife said, like, this is not the time, right? This enterprise, though very admirable in lots of ways, this is not how it's going to happen. It will happen. Morgoth will fall, but it's not going to be like this. This is going to I'm sorry, but no, I don't think this is how it's gonna. Mm. So I'm not gonna lead my people, but I'm also not gonna say no to anybody who wants to go. So Mablung and Beleg want to go, and so they can then lead a contingent. It doesn't have to be huge, but they can lead a contingent of people who are volunteering, other people who want to go. That feels right. And again, because then he can say, I'm not getting in the way, and I'll even help. I'll even help to support, especially. Fingon's army, right?
Then if Thingol's going to be communicating, Gil-galad will be the ambassador from Fingon the High King to Doriath. Thingol's ambassador, are we still going to have it be Celeborn coming back for this? We had mentioned that earlier, that would be a possibility of while Galadriel is out hanging out
right.
with Easterlings.
We have Celeborn at loose ends. Yeah, yeah.
That
would make sense.
Doriath. And so Celeborn could be the one who has to explain Thingol's position to the Noldor. Because, I mean, Thingol can't directly speak to them, right?
No.
So.
And I would also think, and this is.
Is he going to go fight?
Celeborn?
Yeah.
Ambassadors don't usually end up on the front line.
I kind of like. I was thinking about that too briefly, Dave, but I think you probably shouldn't. But I'm coming back to one of the things, Dave, I think that you were implying also before. Thingol is not going to stand in the same room anymore with the Feanorians because he doesn't trust them.
No.
Also, I mean, he can't.
If he's carrying around, there's a reason he doesn't trust them.
Yeah.
Even if he leaves the Silmaril at home, like, that's just not a safe thing for him to do.
Yeah.
In fact, he trusts them. He trusts them to do exactly what they said they would do.
Right, exactly. Yeah. He has implicit trust for Corfin and Calgorm and Carathir.
That they're exactly who they say they are.
Yes. So that's another reason why. If Celeborn is the ambassador, Celeborn could even say that, right? If someone such as if one of the Feanorians makes a comment about Thingol not joining them, Celeborn could say, like, "But could you guarantee the safety of Thingol if he emerged and, you know, was like, could you swear an oath that your oath would not drive you to violence against him if he were there?" Like, that's how could anyone say, like, basically to sort of show that it's like actually almost impossible for Thingol to actually join the Union himself.
Right. He would have to sit out even if he sent his whole army, which is weird.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there could be some, fun, spicy rhetoric.
Which circles back to the consequences thing. And that's where I think the reason Tolkien says that no one came from Doriath except for Beleg.
Right.
Is because he's trying to show how detrimental it was to their efforts. That the whole Baron and Luthien thing.
Yeah. No, so I do like Celeborn in this role. So Celeborn is the one who attends the summit meeting, the council, right, on behalf of Thingol. So he speaks for Thingol at the summit meeting, at the council, and then we have Gil-galad speaking basically for the Noldor in Doriath.
Yeah. So Gil-galad and Celeborn are going to have very parallel roles.
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is a really interesting kind of beginning of a relationship there. And Celeborn stays by Thingol's side in Doriath while Gil-galad goes off with the volunteer expeditionary force to the battle. Okay. Círdan.
So Círdan is one of those characters who has a story that's spanning the entire film from first age through third age. And we always have ideas of what to do with him. And then he's just kind of hanging out in the wings doing absolutely nothing because he's not interacting with anybody. Mm. So what do we have for him in season 7?
Yeah. Círdan is a victim of his own efficiency, right? Like, he runs the best navy in the world so much so that there's never anything for it to do because there's no other sea power ever. Right. So, yeah. I mean, yes.
So I do want to see more of him than we did last season because I'm not sure we saw him.
I was going to say that wouldn't be hard.
Can we send him to the battle?
We could send him.
We know that he supports the Union. He was very supportive of Fingon as High King.
Yes.
And I don't know what that looks like, but he's on board in a way that there's no, well, I don't know if this is a good idea, or I don't know if now's the time. He's like, yes, fight Morgoth. That's what this is. That's a great thing to do here. He's friends with Celeborn from way back, so if Celeborn's back in this, he could interact with him.
Yeah. One of the things that I really like about the position we have established for Círdan is that we have made him the most, I almost want to say extroverted, but that is least isolationist of all the Sindar.
Yes.
Like the Sindar leaders, right? He is the one who he's the bridge builder. There are a bunch of the Noldor who build bridges towards Thingol, and this, especially Finrod, right? But Círdan is the only one among the leaders of the Sindar who is really, of his own initiative, extending himself to establish relationships with the Noldor.
Yeah, he helped rescue Nevrest when it was attacked back in season 4. So he showed up with his navy to save the day and interact with Turgon, and obviously that relationship can't go anywhere on account of Gondolin being isolated. But Turgon's going to come out now, so, you know, I don't know if we can do anything with those
characters. A little reunion there. Yeah, so certainly he could be... I said that Doriath is in a really good place to help to supply both sides. That's actually less true in the West than it is in the East. Like, his access to the Feanorians is easy. Thingol's, from Doriath, I mean, geographically speaking. The gap of Sirion up in that direction is a little more dubious, right? Tol Sirion is now a tomb, right, or a pile, in any case. It's going to be more dubious. They have access to go up, you know, through Brethil and then up the gap to bring supplies in that direction to help Fingon out, but it would be hard to do. Might it be, if Círdan is involved with that, he could bring stuff up the Firth of Drangist?
Yes, yes. Now, you have to go through the Rainbow Clefts there, and that would highlight that location before the tour story.
Yeah. Yeah, so if Círdan is involved, Círdan could be the one, even more than Doriath, or like as an extension of Doriath, basically. Círdan could be the one who is pledging to help to supply the armies and support the armies. He wouldn't really be supporting troop movements because there aren't any troop movements from the south to speak of. I don't think Gwyndor needs a ride. I don't think Mablung and Beleg need a ride, right? But he could be helping to give supplies. He could be supplying them from the Falas directly. He could be supplying them from Doriath. Even Nargothrond could help with supplies, theoretically. And Círdan would be the one who would lead and organize that. Not only organize in the sense of actually execute the shipments, but organize it in the sense of he could be the one who... He could be the voice of, like, this initiative needs more than soldiers. It needs support, right? And this is another way that we can work together. O Thingol's representative, old friend of mine, Celeborn, and O Orodreth, who also doesn't want to get involved in this war, understandably. There are still ways that you can contribute, right? And we can help with that. Yes. So... David Pirtle says, poor Círdan stuck doing logistics. You have to understand, this is a step up for Círdan. Like, this is a promotion, plot-wise, for Círdan. And
this is an extremely massive battle plan that's being... logistics is, like, the whole thing.
Yeah.
If you don't have logistics, how do you make any of this happen?
We're talking about coordinating a continental assault.
Yeah. So, I mean, I realize that on screen it's more exciting to see people wave swords around and fight because, like, it's exciting. But the army's only going to do its job if someone's actually coordinating things in the background, even if it does look boring to, you know, and shuttle things back and forth with your ships.
Right. And the cruel truth is that the entire battle is going to take place very far from the ocean. It's going to be a thoroughly landlocked battle. There won't be any way for Círdan to contribute other than getting off his boat and marching with the army, which is a pretty minor role, right? So having him involved in the summit, you know, in the council meeting, and being in support and pledging his support in this way, it would help to show that this really is a broader effort. It's not just, you know, it's not just Fingon and Mithros, right? It really is a broader effort. Even though we would still be highlighting the fact, as you say, Marie, the consequences of the Feanorian fallout.
Well, and Fingon presumably chose the meeting place, which is Finrod's grave. Like, you don't decide to meet at Finrod's grave and then, like, pretend that that didn't just happen.
Right. Right.
So there's a very deliberate acknowledgement of the recent past, even in the setting of that meeting.
Yes.
Also, I mean, I do kind of like the establishment of the Lend-Lease Act here that's happening, you know, because it gives them something to do while still remaining technically neutral.
Well, they were never neutral, is the
thing. Not neutral, but
yeah,
you
which
know
is
what I
why
mean?
Doing something that's
it's a nice middle ground. It's still a significant, like, their abstention from the battle is still very significant.
Yes.
But it doesn't make them look like idiots and jerks.
Yeah.
Thoroughly.
And it's the reverse of what we've been doing with the dwarves all along. The dwarves have been happy to trade with the elves for supplies. I mean, mostly military supplies, but whatever. Mm-hmm. And just be like, but we're not fighting your wars. You go do that yourselves. And they've been staying out of most of the... Mm-hmm. fighting, and we're going to change that for the Nirnaeth, and we're going to send an army of dwarves into battle right when the other elves are like, we'll send you supplies but not an army.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's I think that's cool. I think that's really interesting. Okay, so that's good. I like that. That leaves us with two things left to talk about, which we will do next time. Our two topics left are villains and dwarves. And with that last transition, actually, let's start with dwarves next time. Mm-hmm. I think that will follow on what we've been doing better. And then we'll end with a review of the villains, right? Mm. We still have a villain to dispose of in this battle. We need to be thinking about the balance of power now, Gothmog's situation in the post-Sauron world. We need to. So there's a bunch of things that we need to sort out. So how is Sauron still involved? To what extent? Like, what kind of? How is that going to work out? All this sort of thing. And then, but first, let's talk about the dwarves. Why their change? How is this going to happen? What's the what is the significance of the dwarves coming in on the battlefield here for the first time?
Right.
Second. Time technically, I guess
they were in that first battle.
In the first battle, yeah.
But that didn't go well as far as their relationship with the elves went. Yeah,
and that can be part of it. Anyway, so those are the two things. We'll finish those next time, and then we'll be ready to do after that the outline, right?
Season outline,
episode outline. Yeah. Excellent. Okay, that's the plan. Thanks everybody. Thanks everybody for joining us. Made a lot of fun progress on things I wasn't anticipating. If you had asked me if we were going to be planning when Gil-galad would get Eyeglos tonight, I would not have thought that that was going to be one of our discussions. But there we go. So, excellent. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Our next session will be on February 1st. Very good. Thanks, everybody. And we'll say, as always, thanks for listening and Godspeed.